Commission on Fire Protection Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting to order. It's June 27th, and it's exactly 9 a.m., so we'll begin the meeting. Secretary, if you'll do the roll call for us.
Great.
Well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we all just introduce ourselves to start?
Vince Abrego, McAllen Fire.
Keith Schmidt, Gonzales Fire.
Jason Collier, Highland Village Fire Department.
Daniel DeYeer, Dallas Fire Department.
Tim Reedy, San Antonio Fire Department.
Daniel Buford, Bryan Fire Department.
And we have a couple of vacancies today. Daniel Anderson is not here. I'm filling in for Mike Wisco, who is excused in A&M with his son on an orientation. And Ken Swindle cannot be here. His mother-in-law just went into hospice, so if y'all would keep the Swindle family in your prayers, we would appreciate it. So I guess we do have a quorum, so we're good to go.
Adoption of the March 21st, 2019 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
Has everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes, or do you need a minute?
Motion to accept the minutes.
Is that good?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? So moved.
Item number 3, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, update reference list for the hazardous materials awareness curriculum. B, updated reference list for the hazardous materials incident commander curriculum. And C, updated reference list for the hazardous materials operations mission-specific competencies curriculum.
Okay, so this has already been adopted at the last commission meeting, but we did not recommend an implementation date, which y'all need to recommend that it's implemented immediately. Otherwise, it goes into effect January 1st, 2020. So we need it to be implemented immediately.
Okay, and this was a previous?
It was already adopted. So if y'all recommend, then they would do it, and then it goes into effect right after the next commission meeting.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to accept the changes in with an implementation date of, I guess, after the next commission meeting or this meeting?
Just say immediately.
Immediately?
Yes.
Upon their approval, it would be effective then.
Are they all available?
Yes.
All the books?
Yeah. The
yes.
books are all available.
Yes.
There's some changes with the books, it appears, as well. Now, was that change done before, or is that being done in this?
It was adopted at the last commission meeting.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
So, Deb, will you need an actual date besides saying today? Will we have to actually say June 27, 2019?
How about effective upon adoption by the commission?
Okay. Is that good with your motion?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? So moved.
Item number 4, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 PAC Chapter 429, Fire Inspector and Plan Examiner, Subchapter B, Minimum Standards for Plan Examiner.
Committee members, what you have are really just the changes for the Plan Examiner component of this for Subchapter B and what the commissioners looked at in their last meeting. Deb, did you get them those handouts yet? I'm going to give you all a handout. What it is, it's a 3-page handout, and this is just for refresher for y'all. The handout will show you the options, if you will, that the commissioners looked at in their meeting. I just wanted y'all to be able to see it as well. So the first page of the 3 pages, that's the one that they voted to publish, the version they voted to publish. And then the 2 behind that just create a different date for the people who would have passed the plan examiner component of the exam.
So to make it simple for all of us, do the people that are performing the duties right now, are they grandfathered into the plans examiner?
They are not right now. That's one of the options, one of the things that you have here in the proposed language, that they would, and the individuals would qualify to apply for plan examiner if they hold an active certification. And then you have three criteria here that that could be used that would allow them to qualify. If they were to qualify via any one of these three, then they would qualify for the plan examiner certification. They would simply apply for it.
And y'all have got records of those past exam, their grades apparently, so that's no problem.
Yeah, so what you're seeing here, I guess if you want, I can kind of touch a little bit on what you actually have in your proposed language here. So the number one, again, the temporary provision is for people would be eligible to apply for plan examiner if they hold an active fire inspector certification, current active certification, and they can meet any one of these three criteria. So number one, they would have passed a plan examiner exam at any time. This, we go back to 2005. We can go back awesome. That far awesome. To see grades. And currently, that's what this one would do, is it would allow anybody. So we would go into our system, we would find all of those passing grades over time, and we can then go into our system and show these individuals, if they haven't already gotten it, we can show them as qualified for plan examiner.
Because I was thinking at one time we talked about that had to have an IFSAC, you know, would have had to got their IFSAC way back when, but if we can go back and see the exam.
Yeah, and again, this is a temporary provision. This is only only good for a period of time.
A year.
Gotcha.
Right now, if they have an IFSAC seal, they can get it.
Right. Yeah, so. Anybody
so either way.
Number two, if the individual is or has been assigned to plan review duties with a local jurisdiction, and we would get verification of that from the head of the program.
So I have a question about that. Typically, in our language, it's this letter that you get, some kind of official self-serving affidavit thing or whatever. You're shaking your head.
We'd be looking for a letter
yes.
from the head of the program saying that this individual is assigned to do those duties.
What if the individual that's trying to get the certification is the head of the program? Can they write it for themselves?
We would ask that it come from whoever their boss is, okay. essentially.
Someone other than themselves,
yeah.
a third party that can verify it. It wouldn't necessarily have to be a non-self-serving affidavit, which is what he's referring to. Just a letter.
So a city manager, maybe, or...
Mm-hmm. And basically, that's the individuals that had inspectors prior to the 05.
Who are doing the job right now, but
correct.
Don't have a plans examiner
because
test.
Because they maybe... Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, could a division chief that's in charge of a fire prevention bureau give this letter, or would it necessarily need to be the fire chief of that department?
The way this is currently written, it's the individual who is head of the plan review program, whoever that would be. So it could be a division chief or whatever of that department.
So in a regulated department, the fire chief is the biggest kahuna in the house. And my opinion is that letter should come from him or his designee, but that he be responsible for assuring that that letter or that person or whatever you want to call it is. He's the one that bears the responsibility for everything from the top down.
Well, yeah, that's a reasonable point. This is, of course, up to y'all what y'all want to recommend to the commissioners when you get with them in the next meeting.
Could we potentially have somebody that's not in a regulated department trying to get the certification?
Not in a regulated department.
Right. So one way or the other, they're going to be answering to...
If that individual holds an active inspector certification and we were to get a letter from the head of the department, in your case, the head of the mm-hmm. department, saying they've been appointed to plan review duties, you could. They could. They could qualify.
But it still falls on the head of the department or the person in charge
section,
of it.
Yes.
Yeah, and right now, again, whoever the person is in charge of that program.
Where you get that, though, is They're still regulated, though, because it'd be ahead of just a prevention
department. Fire prevention department, but it's still ahead of the department.
It's still a regulated department, though.
So that would be my, when we go to this, that it's going to be my amendment is I'm head of the plan review program, head of the department.
And I can tell you all, and this is just, again, a reminder that in the commission meeting, one of the things they were hoping y'all would discuss is whether there should be a time frame for this individual who had been assigned to these duties. I know at least one, maybe two of the commissioners were concerned that someone could have gotten assigned last week. You know, that in their example, and would still qualify for plan examiner certification. That was a concern of theirs. So they asked that y'all at least consider that and address that in your meeting and let them know what you think.
But if they got assigned last week, they would still have had to pass the test, right, and to get the certification. Not the plan, the whole fire inspector certification.
Now, the way this thing is currently written, again, the way it's currently written, these are ORs between each one of these. So the first thing we're going to look at is the person who's holding an active fire inspector certification.
Right.
If they did have plan examiner as a component in their test and they passed it at any time, they meet number one. However, you have those who never took plan examiner, but who have been assigned to those duties for perhaps a long time, they could meet the qualification via number two.
Okay.
And then going on to number three, you now have a group who may or may not have had plan examiner in their test, who have been teaching this part of the program in a training facility, certification training facility. And we had this brought to us, and they said, we've got folks who fall under this. They've been teaching this stuff forever.
Yes.
But they just never had that component of their exam, but they've been teaching it in a certified training facility for a long time.
They were certified before we had plans examiner, yeah. So they were grandfathered in to teach it.
Well, and those are all over the place. I mean, I got brother-in-law's in that boat. I mean, he's got a degree from OSU, but he's never took plans review. He teaches it. He teaches the inspector's class. He's the fire marshal of Plano, or he just retired. But, I mean, he's done a lot of plan reviews. So he falls into number three. He could actually fall into number two or three.
So my point would be is, if you had the fire inspector certification before this changes, you took the plans examiner, or you did it way back when and have been doing it, you should be grandfathered in here. So I'm guessing that all three of these meet that.
Well, I can tell you the reason they're here is because of feedback that we receive. These are not necessarily recommendations from staff. These are just feedback that we received as we were moving forward with this. As all this stuff got adopted and concern came about that there was no grandfathering that existed, this was the feedback we were getting. So that's why you're seeing what you're seeing here. These are instances where
I think there should be grandfathering. There's a line. If you had it beforehand, you should be grandfathered. If you didn't have it beforehand, you got to pass the test. The ones you're talking about, then we would have to go back some period of time and figure out.
The problem with the date is before we split this up and it was the old system, if I came out of operations, I had my inspector certification, and they put me in the fire marshal's office, which happens, and they assigned me to plan reviews duties, I was good to go.
Correct.
So what difference is the date? Just because we split this apart, why does it all of a sudden become an issue? It wasn't an issue 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
For teaching that section of the curriculum, it requires that they hold the certification.
Inspector.
So, for plans examiner.
Now.
That's part of it.
Oh, yeah, I know that, because there's a gentleman in the audience who was in that category that he was teaching at one of our junior colleges last semester because this wasn't split apart. He had all the criteria this semester because we split it apart. He couldn't teach it anymore.
And
he's been teaching for 15. He's been teaching the inspector program plus plan reviews since 2005 when it came into play. But we split it apart, and now he can't. And I think that's just wrong.
I think at the risk of stating the obvious here, until recently, there was no plan examiner certification. It did not exist. This is the first time in my memory where we actually took a component of an existing state certification and pulled it out and said it's its own thing now. So this is kind of an unusual situation. This, I don't know that this has precedent. My folks have been here a whole lot longer than me might know. But again, it created kind of some weird dynamics here, like this, where you have folks who have been teaching it forever who suddenly don't qualify based on our rule language for teaching. So I think anybody has a problem with that.
Well, I think this solves that, though. Yeah. This will solve that.
But what you were talking about, the commissioners had an issue with somebody that just started doing it.
Well, again, I give that to y'all to make sure that you are able to address it in your meeting.
So that's fine. My comment would be is they just started. They got assigned to do it. Then apparently they must know what they're doing, or they wouldn't have been assigned to do it. So that's not necessarily true. Well, but that's just like somebody that already has a certification doing it and may not be very good at it. So if
someone gets assigned to that division, let's say for instance because of a promotion, gets assigned to that division, he got certified after 2005, so he gets assigned to fire inspections. He failed that component of the fire the plans examiner because he's after 2000. So basically, he would have to get his plans examiner to do plans examiner. And so the commissioner would say, well, I assign him to plans examiner because he's got the promotion. That promotion is his. So now he's got to have, let's say, for instance, 90 days to become a plans examiner, take that exam. Or how would that?
If this rule language as it sits right here passes, he wouldn't have to do that because he would meet criteria number two. He's been assigned a plan examiner.
Okay.
So again, it's just this gives the people the ability to qualify via three independent avenues, if you will, to be able to qualify to get plan examiner certification, a grandfathering with three different options.
So the time frame that the commissioners wanted to address was in regards to what?
How long he had been assigned to those duties. That was the concern that had been expressed in the meeting, was that you might have somebody who just got assigned plan review duties a week ago. They've been an inspector, maybe they never passed the plan examiner component, or maybe they never even took it. From way back, and they just got assigned to plan examiner plan review duties, and there was a concern there that there was no time frame here. So again, I give that to y'all for your consideration. I certainly don't have a recommendation one way or the other on that. I will on the next one, but not on this part.
Is this and I don't know, I know this has been discussed, and I don't know if it's in here, since it's, I don't know if it's, if we can discuss it. Is it voluntarily or is it mandatory?
It's voluntary.
Voluntary.
Yeah, they did not adopt mandatory language.
And they sent that back to the.
No, they had two options that they looked at, what the rule language would look like if it were mandatory, what it would look like if it were voluntary, and they opted to go with the voluntary.
Okay.
So there is no appointment. In FIDO, there is no place in FIDO where you would have to go in and appoint somebody to plan review duties. That doesn't exist.
And the ad hoc committee met the last 2 days, right?
I'm sorry?
The ad hoc committee met the previous 2 days.
Yes, but they didn't look at this. They were doing questions.
Okay.
Working on questions for the inspector curriculum.
Well, is there any of the chiefs in the audience wishing to comment or weigh in?
And before you vote on this, I've got another one that the commissioners also wanted to discuss. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump.
I fit right in that category.
Do you want to come up to the podium, please, so we can hear you? And just state your name for the record, if you would, please.
Yes, sir. Chief Tim Gibson from Plainview. I fit right into category Chief Collier mentioned. Missed two questions on the test. How are you? Missed two questions on the test. Didn't get the plans examiner, but I was a fire inspector. I taught it. I've taught many of them. There's fire marshals all over Southeast Texas that came out of my courses. But it comes down to now, for two questions, I don't hold that, and I can't teach it anymore. I can't technically hold that certification. I think the wording and what he's put forth in the assigned duties and things like that, if you're not putting a limitation on the assigned duties, it could leave some room for some ambiguity there. But I think the three things does open the door where we can backtrack and catch those of us like myself, like the other instructors that have taught this, that we can continue doing our job and we can provide the service to our communities and what they hired us to do. I think it's good wording, and I would support it.
Okay. Thank you. So, Tim, also for clarification, so let's assume an individual, he or she in her organization, gets the letter from their supervisor outlining that they're capable of doing these duties or already assigned to those duties. Do they need to pay a fee for the certification?
As it currently stands, yes. There is a certification fee to be paid, application fee to be paid, yes.
So it's the $85 fee?
Yes.
Okay.
There is no test that they have to take in this case because they would be grandfathered as far as that goes.
It seemed like, wasn't that addressed at the commissioner meeting to an extent, or wasn't that discussed?
The fee issue?
Yeah.
Well, and that was the second item that I wanted to remind y'all of, because it was a discussion item there. There is a sense by some on the commission board that they thought that should have been a part of this, either a waiving of the fee or a reduction of the fee, that sort of thing. And they wanted y'all to make that a discussion item here. I am going to go on record here for this one, and I don't normally do this, but I am for this one. I am strongly recommending not doing that. I can tell you that as of this
morning, not doing what?
Not reducing or waiving the fee.
Okay. We can't waive. Based on your comments, I think at the commission, we can't waive it. We could reduce it, right? Is that what you said? Or?
Your memory may be better than mine because I have no memory.
I think that was the discussion. I can tell you as of this morning, there were 425 people who now have plan examiner.
That was my next question. How many have already paid the $85?
We already have a significant number.
How many?
And if we all of a sudden decide we're going to reduce or waive the fee, it becomes an absolute nightmare.
Yes.
In fact, if I were to have to give refunds to individuals, I'd probably be in real hot water with the comptroller's office, because that money's not sitting in our safe here. It's now over with the state of Texas. So it would really be a difficult thing for us to go back and try to fix that.
Terrible.
I'm sorry that if in the minds of some that was something that should have been in there and it just never was, we had a lot of time to get this stuff adopted. And the fact that it didn't make it in there, I don't know what to say. I don't recall it as being a huge matter of discussion in any past meetings. So, again, staff recommendation is to leave this thing as is and just go forward.
I think based on my part up here, I will tell you this on that, and I think now we're the horse is too far out of the gate to go back. But originally when we did this and we split it, I was either for a reduction or no fee, because those people already, I know they didn't have it, but they'd already technically had it, the plans review certification, because it was lumped into one. So now we're pulling it apart, and in appearance wise, from the outside, it looks like this is a money grab. And I've heard that. My phone has rung off the wall. And so I think we have an outside appearance of a money situation on this.
It's a voluntary cert, though.
Unless you want to teach. It's not a voluntary certification if you want to teach. So you got a group of people out there that are teaching this, that it's not voluntary for them, because we won't. They've got to have it to teach. So it may be voluntary, but it's really not. in some cases. So that's the appearance, that's what we've done. Now, out of the, what do we got, 3,200 inspectors or something?
I don't, over 4,000.
4,000. So 10% of them have already paid. Probably another 20% won't ever, or 30% won't ever do this at all. So that, I don't think going back and trying to refund the people that have already paid or reduce it down would be just a logistic nightmare for y'all.
Yeah. I even heard some suggestions about at least giving them a credit for future expenses.
Then you got to keep up with that.
You'd have to have an individual tracking that, and that would be a nightmare.
We've all got way in the fiscal year.
We've always been concerned about carrying that kind of stuff over into the next fiscal year, that sort of thing.
And what do you do with a guy that you credit to him to his next year certification, because if he's a master and a whole bunch, he's not going to get any more certifications. So his credit could go for years.
I'm on the other side of this. I don't think, if this is a voluntary certification, truly a voluntary certification, there should be no waiver of the fee. If you want this voluntary certification, then drop the $85 and pay for it. That's just the way it's like that for everybody.
I think that's where we have to be. I think it's due to the fact that.
But how is it a voluntary certification if you have to have it to teach? I don't understand that.
Well, if you go into the training facility chapter and you're looking at requirements for instructors. And it's actually he alluded to it a little bit. It's very limited, those folks who would actually have to hold the certification. Really, the only people who have to hold it are those who are named as the lead instructor for a particular course. That is the group that would have to. Mm-hmm. Anyone else teaching in that course, you can have uncertified people in anything, any discipline, or any course teaching, if they are teaching as what are considered to be guest instructors, and they're actually teaching under the credentials of that lead instructor.
Right.
So there's a little bit of other language there regarding wildland courses. You remember we got into all that. We had a little bit of stuff there, but that's essentially it. People who are instructing within a course don't have to hold the certification. If they can be shown as guest instructors, the only people who have to hold it for that course in that discipline would be the lead instructor.
Okay, and I'm okay with that.
Me too.
Yeah, that's fine. So the fee thing, I think, is...
Let it go.
I mean, with the commission bringing it up, I'm just curious. I mean, if number two or B, I guess which version you look at, but if it said that they had to be assigned to plan review duties before the date that the rule changed, I mean, is that how many people are we talking about? You know, is that fix it for the commission, or is that again against what we're trying to say? You know, if you said it was as of the date of the rule change, which was, 6 months ago or whatever it was, when we adopted the new...
Are you looking for...
You're talking about in terms of time frame?
Yeah.
Let me clarify. I'm sorry, and I should have clarified here. I think the concern in the commission meeting was that somebody may have only been assigned a plan review duty for 2 weeks.
Right.
It may have been 6-8 months ago or a year ago, because really what this is currently saying is that they are or they have been assigned. So someone may have been assigned to plan review duties at some point in the past.
Okay.
We get the letter saying they were assigned during this period of time. That was, I think, the concern expressed, that maybe that time frame that they had been assigned in that case may have been very, very short.
So they're looking for a length of duty, like of actually fulfilling those duties, when they were assigned to it.
How far
it's
back?
How long were you in that role of...
Gotcha. Before we split this up, it didn't make any difference.
Right.
So 6 months ago, 6 months ago, this wasn't an issue.
No, but what he's saying... Right, I get that. But what he's saying was, hey, we're building a new apartment complex or an outlet mall in our city. Review these plans. And that guy reviewed them that one time 15 years ago and closed a book and walked away. And that was the only time he ever did plans review, because it was a special project at that time or whatever. That's...
then get the certification.
Correct.
And again, you may, this same individual that you're talking about, he, you know, He may or may not have ever taken he may have taken the plan examiner component of the test, missed it by one point, you know, this kind of thing. So, you know,
and they still made him a chief, so. I think we need a break, Mr. Chairman. No, I'm serious. We need a break.
Y'all have to cross your legs for a couple minutes.
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to accept letter B as in our agenda. And I will be happy to add the comments Mr. Reedy suggested to the letter being coming from the head of the
head of the department.
Or designated. I would say chief, but it's actually the head of the department, because that could be prevention or suppression prevention, right?
Yeah. And so,
with it being head of department or head of department's designee?
Or designate, or yes. I'll accept that.
I mean, we'll get a lot of chief signatures.
Sure.
But they're still responsible for it, so. Yep.
Even if it's for themselves?
Well, if it's for themselves, I think it has to be. Or if it's for the chief, then it has to be from a supervisor above him, i.e.
And we can manage that kind of thing internally.
We don't need to state that in the proposal?
I would suggest we not worry about. I mean, we run into these kinds of things sometimes, and we usually manage it just like that. So.
And so my question, are we in discussion?
Well, I don't have a second.
Second.
Okay.
So in C, the letter from the chief training officer of the program runs along the same. But so I don't know who is in charge of the instructors. Who is the person that puts their name on the letter at a training academy?
Well, if it's a training academy, it would be the chief. I think these are the colleges that would be that are out.
Training coordinator might be the person that would do that.
It's what we've used the term coordinator, mm-hmm. training coordinator. In the rules now, we have it listed as chief training officer. That's the top person. That's your instructor three over the whole program.
But that wouldn't... Any regulated department, it wouldn't fall into, because they got a head of department.
You're right.
Number three would only come into play for us.
So who's equivalent to the head of department at a college?
The training
Chief training officer.
That's what I would say, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what it says, chief training officer of the program.
Good with that. And then we're giving them to September of 2020?
Well, that was another thing that they did mention in the meeting. I know that there was a little bit of concern expressed that perhaps this wasn't enough time.
It's a year.
It's
a year.
That's basically, it should be a year from the time it gets adopted.
It'll be a year.
Yeah. But, again, I give that to y'all. I remind you that was brought up in their meeting for y'all to think about.
Yeah, a year's fine, I would think.
Does that fee issue need to be included in the motion?
And so,
In September of 2020, this subsection expires, and now it's required that you go through the plans examiner program.
Yes.
It'll be just like any other certification where you have to pass the exam. You have either an active exam grade or you have an IFSAC seal. Those would be the two ways that you would get it, which is just like any other certification.
Question, since I've made the motion here, do we need to add the fee? I mean, it's really not on the agenda here, or just leave it out, don't touch it?
No, I would just ask that you go to the commissioners with your recommendations as far as that sort of thing goes.
That's which will include leaving the fee as it is.
Right. Yes.
That's y'all's call.
I'm good with that.
One more question, I guess, is, I mean, they've given us three options here. The one that you're choosing is they can get it at any time, because one of these has got March of 2014, and the last one is January 2011. There's three different versions.
Well, these are just comparisons.
That's what the commissioners had in their hand and voted on to get this, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
This is the
chose from.
This pack is the one. These are the three options that they had.
That they had. Okay, I'm sorry.
Your proposal is that at any time.
At any time.
Before this September 2020. with no other dates attached to it.
And so the start date would probably be then, I guess, September 1, 2019?
That would be the, yeah, that's why we chose that. By the time it gets adopted in mid to late July, it usually takes about 30 days to actually become effective by the time it goes to the register and all that, so.
And I think that's probably a good line to draw before, after. I think that's fine. You're probably going to get some people that will probably scramble beforehand.
They do every time.
Yeah, so
every time.
Every time there's a date.
We can't fix that.
So my only thing would be is maybe for this type of thing is to put that, can we put the start date in? I know we put the year expiration, but...
You can, as long as you know that the effective start date is going to be after it's done at the register and all that.
The commission will determine that.
I think this should work pretty well. We can always, you know, make an effort through social media and those sorts of things to remind people, hey, if you fit this criteria, you know, we'll push it out there and get folks thinking about it.
And before we close this about the fee, I'm sure we're going to get pegged with it's a money grab, but wasn't our idea to split the certification up in the beginning. So just for a record, it's not the commission's idea to split the certification up. Go ahead.
It's for the record, this agency is required to generate a certain amount of revenue over an annual and a biannual period. We have to generate a certain amount. Once that's done, understand the agency, anything above that, this agency benefits zero from additional revenue, with the exception of a little IFSAC seal revenue that comes in over a certain amount. There's no advantage to this agency whatsoever to do a, quote, money grab, particularly if we've already met our revenue requirement. It doesn't do us any good whatsoever. It simply goes into the general fund and it's gone.
So we know that.
People raising the question.
People raising the question.
So are we clear on the motion, Deb? Does it need to be restated?
No, I got it.
Okay.
But if you look in 419, which is our enabling legislation, it says the commission shall set and collect a fee for each certificate that the commission issues.
And because this is a new certificate.
And that's what you pointed out during the last commission meeting. And I recall that.
So do we...
I think we just leave it as is, and go. I mean, that's my recommendation.
If there's no statement on there, then it's just an 85. It's the regular fee for everything.
That's
right?
The regular fee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
That's fine.
So it should.
I'm all.
Is there any other discussion or any other comments? Are we missing something somewhere? We've been chasing our tail on this inspector thing for 3 years. Yes, sir. If you would, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Thank you.
My name is George Maloney, retired from Mesquite Fire Department, now working at Collin College with the Fire Academy. The one part about the voluntary plans examiner has been in the curriculum for the inspector for 14 years. There are a lot of people out there whose job description says they have to be a certified plans examiner because it was part of their curriculum, and their job description now says that those people are now scrambling also to go back over the last 14 years to figure out what do I need to do so I can keep my job. So it is a voluntary certification, but because it was part of the certification over the last 14 years, that got written into a lot of job descriptions, which is something to think about with the voluntary.
Well, but this takes care of that.
This takes care of that.
This takes care of that.
Well, yes.
Yeah, they'll still have the certification that'll meet their job description. Plus, those can be amended from time to time as well without an act of Congress, so, or should be.
So do you see that this takes care of it? Or?
Yes.
Okay, so because if there's still confusion, then we need to
I guess, clarify it more.
Again, we'll work on getting information out there.
I think these three options.
To departments, yeah.
It does a good job basically at grandfathering.
Yes, yeah. I think it's the best of them.
Unless we're missing something, which we'll hear about within a couple of days.
If I hear something, I'll for sure let you know.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the proposal?
Aye.
Any against?
So moved.
Let's take a real quick break, and we'll resume in just a few minutes so Jim can go to the back.
Wow. On tape?
On tape.
All right. Y'all turn your mics off.
Yeah, don't think of it.
Okay, we're back in session.
Item number 5, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 439, examinations for certification, subchapter A, examinations for on-site delivery training.
These proposed rules, if you go to page 23, you'll see one part there, and then the following page, that chart, page 24. Is simply addressing the number, possible number of pilot questions on an exam. It's setting more of a standardized number for that, maximum number for that.
No other changes.
I believe that was it in the chapters.
Yeah. So, just out of curiosity, why?
Our testing folks had noticed that we just didn't have a consistent way of addressing that, and they felt like we needed to.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay, any discussions? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed?
No. Item number 6, discussion and possible action regarding the rule review for 37 TAC Chapter 459, fire and life safety educator.
Here on page 27, we're removing the special temporary provision.
The date.
And it expired February 28th, so we're removing that language. And we're also adopting language in both of them here for fire safety educator 1 and 2. That allow people to get an IFSAC seal. We've been approved for IFSAC by IFSAC for those two.
Just marching along.
Chairman will make a motion to approve.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those that approve?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Item number 7, discussion of the 2018 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and submission to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
So you all have seen this once before. There are probably a few minor changes in there, maybe just in a few of the numbers. It's been updated a little bit. But other than that, it's essentially what y'all had seen the first time. We went ahead and included it again this time in case you had anything you wanted to talk about.
Have we made our recommendation on this yet?
No. That actually got pushed to the Health and Wellness Committee. And I know that they are working on it. I've had correspondence with one of the members of the committee who had asked for some additional information, and they're working through it. So I will expect that they will bring recommendations to the commissioners in their meeting.
I'd like to see with the new House bill or 2551 being passed, presumptive law for the cancer, change up some of the verbiage on the cancer side of this, because now with it passing through the state, saying that those 11 types of cancer are now presumed to be caused by firefighting, to open up the door for our guys to get treatment. Some of the stuff like the encourages and urges shall be reported. I know it says it's a reminder under that, but with this new bill coming in, I think that we need to start highlighting that, because under what the new bill also states is that these cities are required now, if you have a firefighter, you're supposed to report that. There's no more, maybe this isn't workers' comp, this isn't anything. You're required to do that, and you no longer fall under sovereign immunity for a city to be protected by not reporting that. They can be financially responsible for that. So our chiefs need to understand that. If somebody in your department gets cancer, it's one of the 11 cancers that just got passed under presumptive law, then they are required to go through the workers' comp policy and start doing it. If not, they're opening themselves up, they're opening their city up to be financially responsible for liability for not reporting it. So,
Mr. Chairman, on the tail of that fine speech that was given, I'd like to make a motion. One of our recommendations, or we make a recommendation to be added to this, that the cancers that are mandated to be reported by the presumptive law be included in mandatory reporting, that we recommend that they be mandatory to report those cancers to the fire commission.
Just the 11?
So it needs to go beyond 11, but those are the 11 guaranteed written presumptive law. And it's still, presumptive law allows you to still file for the other ones. It's just that the law hasn't umbrellaed the rest of them yet.
I'd like to see the other. Have an other, but have a fill-in blank or something into it to where we.
Well, absolutely.
I've got two guys that have it that aren't, is it part of the 11, but we need to start tracking that.
Exactly. No, absolutely. If a guy, regardless right now, especially with the sovereign immunity, beyond just the 11, if a guy gets cancer or any firefighter gets cancer in your department, you need to be required to report that through workers' comp. There's still presumptive law in Texas over any cancer. It's just that these are the outlined 11 major cancers that we're seeing at a high number across the country. The other cancers, you still fall under presumptive law, but understand it's not going to be as easy of a track with other organizations that are going to fight against us.
So I'll amend my motion to highlight the 11 that are primary and any other cancers.
And this is mandatory.
This is mandatory. And the reason being is that, one, we have a presumptive law in this state that the legislators have said and passed is valid. This is law in this state now. And in order for the fire commission to do its job and ensure the safety of the firefighters, we need to know the prevalence of these cancers and if we can make any impact on those cancers through rules, regulations, or standards being adopted. Gee, I hope that was all on tape.
That will definitely help. And I'll tell you one of the major reasons why is the cover's about to be pulled back off of our heads. We're going to start seeing that there is a high alarming number of cancer cases here with firefighters. And it's going to start forcing departments to be more compliant with 1851 rules. It's going to start seeing you're going to have guys going out and getting NFPA procedures for their wellness checks. And we're going to start seeing more cities adopt policies that are going to open up cancer screenings for our guys. Because at the end of the day, it's the city's responsibility to take care of their long-term investments. And their investments are dying, and they're leaving the job every single day because of cancer. And only having 8 reported cases or nine reported cases of cancer because it was people didn't read it right. So we're about to see a big change. So
my department has over 30, and we got 9. Dallas is probably over
30. We're over 35 in Dallas.
And there was 9 reported.
Currently.
That does nobody any service, and it doesn't tell the true story of what's going on either. So in order for this commission to be effective, we need to know the true story of what's going on with firefighter cancer. That's the reality of it. And as far as the chiefs go, it's going to cost them a lot less to do screenings and treat this stuff before the fact than rather than have a guy have to go through surgery or chemotherapy or death or disability.
Yeah, line of duty death benefits.
I mean, it's just a lot cheaper to do it that way anyway. So the flag's up on this, and so we need to be on board with everybody else. So that's my motion, sir.
So you have a motion. We don't have a second yet, do we?
Second.
I've got one now.
Additional discussion.
Grace? If these are your recommendations, I don't really have anything to add. I think they're good recommendations. I think if the commission wants to adopt it, it'll maybe cut down on some of the confusion about should I report, shouldn't I report, how do I report, that kind of thing.
There's a lot of it's kind of hard. You read this, and it says the commission strongly encourages, and then urges, and then it's a reminder underneath, and the waters get extremely muddy really fast at the bottom of that page. And so I think by following through with that motion and having that verbiage in there and changing it up, I think you're going to start seeing a better reporting on it, more accurate.
Within our injury reporting application, our web application, we don't even have a good way to report cancer, so it's confusing.
So the motion that we have right now is to make those recommendations. Are there any other recommendations that need to be made to this report, or would it be a separate motion? Or are we just taking the report with the proposed?
The recommendations you're making, I'm assuming, are to the report document. Is that where y'all are talking? What y'all are talking about here?
Yeah.
Changes to the report document itself.
Yes.
But if we make this motion and vote on it, I guess my question would be, what if there are additional changes?
The recommendations that we're looking for every year are recommendations to the Texas Fire Service based on the information that's in this report. That's what we look for every year. So. And again, I think the Health and Wellness Committee is looking at that, but if you all as a committee do have a consensus on one or more recommendations that you want to carry to the commissioners in their meeting in July, you can certainly do that.
I think this is a recommendation for a change in the input of the report, not the recommendations out of the report.
Well, I need to make sure I'm clear about.
Correct.
The recommendations that y'all are making, where are you expecting to see the change? Where would you want to see that implemented so that I can understand?
Doesn't the injury report go to the legislature?
It goes to the fire marshal's office, and it gets included in their annual report.
I think this first change is actually on the reporting side with some rule change that makes it mandatory that if you have cancer in your department, you have to report it versus voluntarily. Because now with the state law, so in the FIDO injury reporting section, we need to change that to include those 11 cancers and then the other.
And this report should reflect mandatory reporting.
Right. So getting to what you're saying, Tim, I think that one of the recommendations that we pull out of this report is we can highlight that this is the cancer what we have this year that was reported before the Senate bill passed. But I think what going forward, something to pull out of there to distribute out to how to use this report would to be highlight that verbiage that we just talked about and send that out to the departments. That should be something that's on the fire chief's desk. What we're pulling out of this report to use is, this is what was documented last year under some confusion of the volunteer side of the things. But here moving forward under this, the reporting on this, and that would be pulled out of the report. And then also, like we talked about before, was utilize some of the things that we saw alarming growth in. I know we talked about how to use this report in the future, and some of that stuff was looking at it quarterly, seeing what are some of the trends that we're seeing in those times of year. That way, if we know in the summertime we see a lot of heat emergencies or accidents or something like that, we can now say, hey, listen, we want to, before that quarter comes out, the commission sends out just some information on, hey, we notice in this time of year this, or like we're seeing across the state where we're getting exposures to cleaning chemicals for their gear. If we see a trend of where we're seeing guys like from Harlingen who got chemical burns from cleaning components of their gear, and we're seeing that across the state in different areas, then we need to, that would be something like, hey, an alarming number of this, and put that out there as well. So continue to do those benchmarks, but y'all have done an awesome job reporting. Yeah. And the stuff that y'all are putting out now on the social media, great job. So
thank you.
Good stuff.
I had reviewed the minutes from the previous meeting, excuse me, and I noticed we were discussing serious injuries in the last report. I don't have the copy of the report we had last time, but I know I had raised the question that it had shown there were more serious injuries than there typically had been for the previous 6 years, significantly more. I think we were averaging 15 a year, and all of a sudden it jumped to 400. Mm-hmm. And I guess we were discussing whether that was like a reporting issue or if it was a program issue that you guys had, but I'm looking on here now, and now it looks like it's back in line, so I don't have a comparison to the previous report. I don't have that with me today. But
actually, we decided to do away with the serious category. Oh, no. Wait. One of the reporting categories, maybe critical? I can't remember. Because there was confusion in the new reporting system and how things got put into those different categories, whether it's just minor, serious, critical, whatever. So I think it was critical that we decided to pull out.
I know we had discussed, because I remember you even suggesting the need for some potential training videos on your website, but obviously you don't have the manpower to do that right now, and that's a long list of things that need to be done. Because even like looking at this report real quick, just trending over just the last 3 years, our minor injuries have gone down statewide, but our serious injuries have gone up. So I'm curious as to if the reporting has changed because of the system or because of the interpretation?
It changed significantly between 2017 and 2018, because that's when we implemented this new system that's come out. So that's probably why you're seeing some discrepancy. I doubt that there has been, you know, a really big change in the Texas Fire Service. It's difficult to know because the reporting is different.
Isn't it based on days off or days lost or something? Isn't that how we categorize that?
Yeah, it's actually in this report right here on page 39. It defines minor and serious.
I'd have to go back and listen to the thing. I don't remember exactly how the discussion went on that. But, yeah, if I remember, it seemed like it had to do with how the current reporting module was set up. And so it was just tallying differently than it had been in the past. And so it created something that looked like there was a gigantic leap in that particular type of injury when there really wasn't. It was just the way it was being input into the thing, but I'd have to go back and look at it again to see exactly.
Well, from my experience, I would think that there's probably some interpretation issues out there, because if memory serves me right, if a member's injured at 8 o'clock in the morning and they go home for the remainder of the shift, they're not missing a shift. It's not until they miss the following shift, in which case now it would become a serious injury. And I think there's probably interpretation to that, because if you're off injured for 23 and a half hours of your 24-hour shift, some people could say that's a serious injury. And I was wondering if maybe that's where the numbers had increased. It was just an interpretation.
Of course, it's been that way since we started the system.
Correct.
I wouldn't think that would have caused that kind of change from 2017 to 2018. I think it really had to do with the interface that reporters were using. Yeah, and it was just going into different. Again, I'd have to go back and refresh myself at this point to see exactly what we found on that.
Okay.
Has there been any discussion in the concerns or needs to start tracking suicides?
That hasn't come up yet.
And I'll make the same comment I've made before. We track injuries, but included in injuries are cardiac and EMS exposures, which are not, quote, orthopedic or physical injuries, but they are injuries to the person. PTSD and the stress and the suicide would be some of the same thing. I don't know if we can break that out in some fashion or if we need to, but
I think it starts with the person reporting. And that was just like the cancer thing. It's always been required for them to report it if somebody falls under workers' comp.
Right.
The problem is that there's that lack of information that goes through, that there is presumptive law out there for these things. And if you do not report it, then it's not happening. So I think it takes our leadership and our fire departments to go there and say, hey, we have something. It's not our job to be the judge and jury on this one. Put it it out there. If somebody has this injury, somebody has this illness, which is post-traumatic stress, if that's an illness that one of our guys has, it should be documented. It's an exposure. It's a long-term exposure that we're dealing with. And so I think that our department heads need to be moving in that direction to start just documenting everything.
There is a psychological category as far as a type of injury. I mean, maybe that's something that we could promote a little bit, you know, on social media.
So there's more than one? There's only one, right, for last year? I'm looking on page 49.
Well, I just turned to page 42.
42.
And there's table 7 at the top. It's got types of injuries and the count of how many. And there's apparently 3 psychological injuries. I mean, we don't know from that if they were fatalities or whatever they were. But I'm just saying there is a way to report it at this point, but maybe people just don't think of like, oh, somebody had a suicide, I'm going to put it in the injury report.
And unfortunately, a lot of those psychological injuries go unreported, and at the point where they are reported, it's already gone too far. That, I mean, in other words, some intervention had to happen, now they reported it. Unfortunately, the end result of that is suicide, and you know, the only time we hear about a firefighter who suicide is in the headline news. And I think in regards to PTSD and regards to firefighters who are dealing with PTSD, the only way we can emphasize a problem is equally as like cancer is that we start tracking that. And I think somewhere on here there needs to be, in my opinion, where a department, if they have a firefighter that suicides, that should be starting a tracking mechanism to see that if we have a concern in our state with firefighters going down that unfortunate road, we need to raise a red flag and start trying to intervene in some form or manner. So
how do we accomplish that?
Yeah, just putting a tab there and allowing the department to check mark it. Yes, they've had one, because it's known that they do have it. And a lot of times we know it's happening because we attend those funerals for that individual. You know, and unfortunately, our department, we've had some. And so I think that's those where if a department has an individual who suicides, a simple, yes, we did, and that way we can start seeing, you know, state of Texas, unfortunately, we may come to a point where we had 20 firefighters that suicided. And that, to me, that's alarming.
Do you think that we could put a tab in there for PTSD and then a fatality, however we track the fatalities?
Yeah, we can do it. It's a good suggestion.
It's a start. I mean,
would you want to put wording in there mandating it, though, that it has to be reported?
That's presumptive law for post-traumatic stress now. There's coverage for it for our firefighters. So, I mean, I think it just goes exactly along the line with the cancer, that correct, it's a reportable injury that our guys are going on, an exposure that we need to take care of. And like I said, I'll keep bringing that up, that they're not immune to that, the sovereign immunity anymore for the city, so they have to actually report that. So
just on the PTSD side, I guess we would need to figure out how we can get it aggregate, not because the stigma the stigma for PTSD is worse than the stigma for cancer. So getting an accurate reporting is what I would wonder about. So, but just, I mean, got to start somewhere. So.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing that you brought it up. I mean, good to have the conversation.
So do you want to make a recommendation that we include that in here, in the recommendations?
Absolutely. And I know Tim's still waiting on what he wants pulled from this to be delivered to those, what to do with it. And so I think that those would be two of the big highlighted things that we pull from this is going forward, like having that stuff out there where these are under this new law. This is what it is. We'll send this page with the cancer, but understanding that it now encompasses more than this right here that it strongly encourages, it is required. And so I think that if that's something that the commissioners could pass, is pulling that out there and outlining that new law that's out there, that presumptive law, and giving it to our fire chiefs or the fire marshals and letting them distribute it out, I think that would be great.
Sure.
Do you think we need to make a recommendation here, or do we need to bring language to the commission meeting?
You need to bring it to the commission. That's what I was going to say. If you would, I'm going to take my direction from the commissioners regarding this report. If you have specific recommendations regarding the document itself, if you have specific recommendations to them regarding what you think people should be reporting to us or what you'd like to see them reporting to us, those kind of things, please create and provide specific recommendations to the commissioners regarding that so that they can consider it and then let me know what they want to see changed in the actual document going forward.
Okay.
Well, I know the Health and Safety Committee has done a lot of work, and they have a proposal at the next commission meeting, so we're just trying to help augment that for them because we want to partner, right? We want to get this information and help that committee continue to move forward to impact the safety and well-being of the firefighters.
No, I agree 100%. It's just what I'm hearing is that you're making changes to the document or right. to the input system, that kind of thing, and that's fine. That's fine. I just want to make sure that the commissioners understand. Y'all make sure that you're very clear to them what you're recommending in terms sure. of changes to our reporting system, how it's working right now, versus how it's working right now. And again, secondary to that would be any recommendations that you would like to see as a part of this document when it goes to the fire marshal's office. Is there something here that y'all would want or recommending that we, the commission, should say to the Texas Fire Service, based on what we see in here, we've got a real problem with this. We recommend that departments do this in order to, that sort of thing. If you have anything like that, then I would certainly, and I'm assuming that's what the Wellness Committee, whoever the identified individuals are in the Wellness Committee who are working on this, that's what they, I hope, are coming up with.
Well, they're coming up with what to do with this information. I'm a member of that committee, and that we're working on what to do with that now.
Well, that's great.
The question here is we're talking about reporting. That's our biggest problem right now is not having departments report. We had 9 people with cancer who reported cancer last year, and I know I personally work for an organization where it's more than 5 times that, so or almost 5 times that.
And I understand y'all.
So our recommendation.
We can have all kinds of discussions about how we can do this better. With all kinds of, and that's great. That's a good thing to do to improve on what we're doing. But I got to tell y'all, every year that we've done this since 2010, we staff have struggled trying to obtain recommendations that become a part of this document that go out to the Texas Fire Service saying, these are problems we're seeing you guys need. That's exactly what 419 says we're supposed to do. We can have the internal discussions all day long about how to make this thing work better or what to do with the information. But what we're really needing at this point, as much as anything, are those recommendations that get added on the last page of this thing that are addressed to the Texas Fire Service.
Okay, so here's our recommendation, at least for my purpose, my part. Our recommendation is that our cancer amongst firefighters is underreported because it's optional, and the recommendation of this group is that it should be mandatory.
I don't even think that it's not optional, and that's the thing is what we talked about this last time, and I think that if it's a problem with, I know, you, Grace, you mentioned something about the tab you have to click for cancer, and it's kind of confusing. So if it's something we can add to the last page, which is showing the process of how to do that as a quick little last page, hey, how to file for this, and it's fixing the problem on the reporting side, then yeah. Also, highlighting it on the last page, the presumptive laws. So going in there and putting out there Senate Bill 2551 for cancer, and then looking at, just for the record, the post-traumatic stress bills, and from 2017 was House Bill 1983, and from this session, House Bill 2143. And so those are things that I would say that are going above and beyond, and having those actually listed in the back for people to see, that shows this is a requirement. And so
recommendations. Yeah, so read them, because they're requirements.
It's no different than, like, I think that a lot of our departments lack 1851 policies on their gear and stuff like that. I would have no problem as a recommendation putting that in the back for additional information on maybe a sample 1851, something for departments to look at. If you don't have one or you need one with a little bit more teeth, here's some ideas or here's what's recommended. And I know that you already do that whenever you go through the inspections process, but we still don't see some of those things at some department levels. You know, it may be in a book somewhere on a fire chief's desk, but it's not being distributed out to the masses. So,
Tim wants to say something.
I know.
I'm with you. Your idea behind all that is great. I'm with you on all of that.
You don't think it matters.
Well, this is not necessarily the platform to address everything. And again, the idea with the recommendations that will go forward with this report have to do with specifically with the data that's in this report. And it's been taken, reviewed, some level of analysis has been done, and we're able to say as an organization, you know what, based on what we're seeing here, we got some challenges in these areas. Those are the kinds of things that really need to end up in the recommendations on this.
And I 100% agree with you. And I think that we have that information on injuries. I think we have that information that we can do. We've talked about this before on some of the stuff to get out there. The problem is the data is skewed, because we currently, in right now, we do not have department heads following the rules right now with reporting this stuff. It's not optional under 419 if a person files for workers' comp a cancer claim. And I can tell you right now, with a note, like guaranteed, there was more worker comp claims for cancer than 9.
We can fix your concern going forward within the report and within our reporting input. We can fix that. And we can get more information out there, making sure departments understand if it's been filed under workers' comp, whatever it is, it needs to be reported. Mm-hmm. We can do that.
Right.
That's not a problem. We can't. But again, there's more to this report than that.
Absolutely.
As serious as cancer is, there's a whole lot more to this report than just that. Is there nothing that we need to tell the fire service based on all the numbers we're seeing? That's again, that's the struggle that we run into every year when we begin asking for recommendations based on what you're seeing right here.
So there is. So if you go to page 50, the burn injuries, our thermal heat burn injuries are climbing as a percent or as a number. The thermals are climbing. So, and then with that, the heat head, the ear burns. I don't know if that's from one year to the next, if that's climbed or not. But that's a symptom of, ear burns are a symptom of, one, wearing a hood properly or wearing the ear flaps on your helmet properly. Pure and simple. If you wear your hood properly and wear your ear flaps properly and you get an ear burn, you're probably an anomaly. So,
I would almost debate that, but you're putting yourself in an unnecessary environment, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, getting burned through your ears before you get burned through your gear is pretty significant.
Tim, I thought we met with this, and maybe it's all these meetings are running together, but I thought we discussed those issues to pull out, and I thought we talked about this before on some of the tracking the trends for the time and pulling out, hey, we're seeing, like we said,
seasonal, these are the stuff that we're seeing. We're going into that. And I thought those were the recommendations that we made prior to that, but I guess you want the hard fact data pointed out in this one.
Well, once again, what you're describing there is our internal process. And that's great. I mean, that's good guidance for us. We can begin working on those kinds of things as an internal process. We can begin working to track better seasonal types of things. We can do that.
But what I'm saying is I thought that recommendation came out prior to this because we talked about doing this stuff. And so I thought that was some of the stuff that was going to be listed as the recommendations for this.
That would not be considered a recommendation that would be included in this report.
Okay.
So our thermal burns are rising a little bit as a percentage, not that much. And the majority of our burns by body part are ear and then upper body, which would run into normally compression burns or upper body torso burns. So,
Chair, is your committee, though, not work? I thought that's what the Health and Safety Committee was looking at, diving into this report, pulling those.
Well, I'm getting confused here. Like Tim's saying, we need to make the recommendations on the report that's being sent to the state fire marshal.
Right.
The question of what are we doing with the information, that doesn't need to be addressed
with the report. That's an internal process, and I'm certainly happy
that's what that committee's addressing.
Suggestions on
okay,
that,
so the committee is not addressing the recommendations that goes to state fire marshal.
No.
Well, I don't know. One of the committee members asked for raw data. We actually, I had my IT guy pull out a bunch of raw data and send it to him so that he could dive a little deeper into what was there. So,
because that's some of our questions. So I'll sit here and just play devil's advocate. I think most of us sitting up here right now agree that the cancer is probably 10 times worse than what's reported.
Uh-huh.
If that's true, then is there a chance that thermal injuries are not accurately reported either? Is there a chance that ears versus face, neck, or wrist are inaccurate? Not from your collection of the data. You only can work with what you've been provided.
Right.
I get that. I think that's a legitimate question to ask, and I don't know if we can even debate that. I don't think there is an answer for it. Because I question my own organization. I would love to see better tracking of the data so that a committee like the Health and Safety can look at the real information and trend. If things are trending, Jim just mentioned it looks like there's a trend in
thermal
burns to ears, but that's based on the fact that we're assuming all of this data is accurate. And I don't see that there's a checks and balance. I question that. I don't believe that. I don't believe the data is accurate.
Well, but for
it
burns,
could be twice as bad as what he suggests.
Well, burns are different. But the burns are different because burn is a compensable injury, and you have to report that. Even a burn that's treated has to be reported.
What we can do is we can work in our outreach mechanisms to make sure that it's clear to departments. We can put this in the FIDO thing. When you pull up the injury reporting module, we can make it clear in a number of different places that if something gets reported to workers' comp, you have to report it here. That's our language. That's our rule language, basically. If it's reported to workers' comp, you have to do it here. So that...
But how do we know that that's occurring?
So here...
We have to check with workers' comp, and that's what we got into all the pain last time. Maybe with this new presumption law, they're going to code it differently, but we're going to have to sit down with workers' comp. But that was the problem we ran into last time. It's very final.
Here's another thing, too, is I do know, and you probably know this, too, is when I fill out an accident report for an injury at work, if I don't go see a doctor, I'm not sure if it goes any farther.
It's just first aid only.
Yeah. That's an issue.
Because there's a lot of injury and illnesses that don't get up to high enough to where a department would interpret as need to be reported.
Right.
You know what this guy, he got burned. Yes, he got burned in his ears, but we're not going to report it because didn't have no loss of time. He didn't go see a doctor, but in all reality, that is an injury that needs to be reported. That is an ear that's been burned due to something. And so you know, I think that the reporting is that the report is good, but what I'm thinking is that it is not accurate. It's not accurate in the sense because the verbiage doesn't make a department truly required to report those injury illnesses, because it's one of those, well, it's bad, but it's not bad, but I'm not going to report it within the reporting system. And we need to get away from that and make it to a point where the department has to report those injury illnesses. You know, when a person brings those injury away, rather, regardless if it went to workman's comp or not, if a firefighter comes and says, hey, I've got burned or whatever, it needs to be accurately reported. And I strongly feel that, you know, I was looking at some of these injuries and illnesses. We got some guys in our department that I know that, you know, they've been injured and they're not reported here, you know, because it may have not gone that high.
But let me let you all know this, though. And again, if you go back into 419, into the statute that authorizes us to do anything, if you go back into that, the best that statute allowed for, and in fact what it actually said, was that workers' comp and the commission would share information. They would share their data with us and we could do something with it. That was it.
Yeah.
Right. So the reason, that workers' comp thing is in our rules is because that's really all the statute allowed for. And I've said this before, and I've been on record saying it. It can be argued that this whole program goes beyond the authorization of statute. Now, I'm not saying it's not a great program, but it's not what 419 originally called for the agency to do. It's going to be interesting to me what our Sunset Review people do with this fall. They will look at it.
And my memory was we created our own system because it was so difficult to work with comp, to trace it all out, that we essentially started our own parallel system. And then years ago, we tried to all get back on the same system, but their coding over a comp was so complex and a pain. And we still need to try to work that out. It's my general memory of it.
And again, I wasn't a part of this when it first got started back in 2009. When they began working on it, but apparently they pretty quickly realized that what workers' comp had was going to be very difficult for the agency to use, which is why we developed the system that's currently in place, why it was developed the way it is. So, and I know I'm saying a lot here, but that's one of the reasons that I caution everybody to be very careful about what we require of departments, because anything that we do, we need to be able to have some standing in our authorization statute to be able to do that. If you can argue that it can, so be it. But again, I think we have to be very careful with that so as not to get too far afield with what we're actually authorized or not authorized to do.
I think that's what sets us aside from other regulatory entities, is that we go beyond for our members of that group. And I think that as somebody who still works on the floor, I think that it should be a responsibility. And I know that we have to caution ourselves, but I think that open records type feeling of being able to go out there and seeing what's happening across the state and having that insurance that there's somebody looking at these, because we do catch stuff. You know, I was going to ask you, Grace, on if you look at some of the stuff like on 43, where we saw a growth of 110 issues of injuries that happened at station maintenance. Do we have a kind of a breakdown of what that is? Is that like falling off ladders, pressure washing?
Probably narrative behind some of that. You don't see all the narrative.
Correct. Maybe that's some of the things that we, workplace injuries that happen inside the station, you know. You saw it grow from 55 to 165, something we could add to a recommendation. But looking at some of those things, like driving and riding an apparatus, we still had 173 injuries. That was a growth. It grew from 92, so that's some of the big things that we're seeing. So those should be red flags when we see something that big. So as far as recommendations, and also all others on that page, what do we have, kind of what falls into that?
I'd have to take a look. There's there's just so many things that people could be doing.
Oh, I know.
I'm sure there's some identification, but for the purposes of the report, yeah, to keep that one correct thing from being two, three, 4 pages long,
oh,
you know,
it's hard to check that option of dodgeball at the station. You know?
Right.
That's why it got hurt.
I know I've mentioned this before, but and this is just kind of a big picture thing. But once again, you know, when you're talking about that kind of stuff, station duties, doing those kinds of things, year in and year out, 35% to 40% of all of the injuries you see in this thing are happening at non-emergency events.
Sure.
You got all day long to do this stuff, and you still get hurt.
24 hours.
I don't know. That seems like a problem to me. And some of these injuries, you know, I don't think we can afford to minimize that. Some of these injuries are serious. People are off for a long time because of something they did in a non-emergency situation.
Well, I think that's where the interpretation is, because you highlighted a couple of significant increases, but there's also some significant decreases.
Correct.
And I would almost ironically question where it talks about moving about station, comma, normal activity. Well, if we're injuring 289 people, I don't think that's normal anymore. I mean, if that's considered normal activity and we have 289 injuries last year, decreased significantly this year, mm-hmm, but that may just be the reporting system. Maybe they're just placing that into station maintenance now instead of normal activity, but I would almost say it can't be normal activity if we're getting that many injuries.
Are you wanting more detail there? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's the reporting system or it's just the interpretation of which column you check that box. And that's, well really, and I say check the box because that's where my passion is. And that's going back to like sunset when it comes around. We're not just trying to check boxes here. We're trying to affect change. Right?
Absolutely.
We're trying to address the safety and health and wellness of the members in the fire service. Regardless of how we get there, we need to get there. We've got to get there. And that's why I compliment everybody in the room, because I believe that that's our focus.
Absolutely.
We're just trying to figure out the best way to do it.
Right.
Maybe when we have those high percentages, Grace, could you flag them and then pull them out for some kind of narrative about what they were? Is that possible?
What do you mean by high percentages?
Like if we get a significant growth in something, pull
like
it out.
Like station maintenance, that went up threefold. So
mm-hmm. Pull it out and take a look at it and highlight it of why. I don't know.
Like what people were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think to some degree what you're describing here, and I would say we probably do need to be careful to some degree, because there were significant changes in the input system for the reporting from 17 to 18. So that may be some of the changes where you see a bump like that. Mm-hmm. It was reported correctly in the 2018 thing, but it may have been reported slightly differently in the 2017.
Because of the system.
So, but again, when you look at big picture, you know, when we know the activities, regardless of what we call them in here, we know the activities that are, for instance, non-emergency activities versus emergency activities, that kind of thing. We know those. We can drill deeper, I'm sure, and go in and look at specific categories there if we wanted to, and see if we wanted to do something with that. See if we wanted to get some information out there to departments via a social media posting or a quarterly posting on injury stuff, you know, that kind of thing. We can certainly do that.
So could the recommendation then be that we know that the data that we're collecting is much better than anything we've ever done before, because we're now capturing the data. I think that some of the members are questioning how accurate is the data, but so then could the recommendation be that, again, we just need to stress that we get this stuff reported and that we try to work to ensure that it's as accurate as possible? Because, I mean, we could, if you'd like, I mean, we could sure go through there and point out recommendations of things that we see, but Chief DeYeer, I mean, if the data has been reported differently, you know, are those recommendations then the right recommendations? You know, like I said, if we're going to recommend that we really address something, and it maybe that's just because of the way it's been reported, maybe we're not looking at the data the same way. I don't know if I should give a recommendation based on that, I guess.
Well, you may choose not to. Again, I think if you look at enough of the information there in terms of of big picture.
Right.
There are some things, there are some conclusions you can reach, regardless of how all the details had been done in the 18 report versus 17.
But that's what you're looking for, is specific recommendations then based on the data that has been collected to help reduce accidents, injuries.
Yeah, I would say anybody who's interested in providing a recommendation, I would say if you look at the whole report and, you know, you look at that thing and you go, you know, boy, this sure did jump out at me. You know, and I would think that would be worth mentioning. If you then can conclude that maybe we need to say something to the Texas Fire Service about this particular area based on that information we see, then that would be a reasonable one to do.
I definitely think y'all did a great job, because y'all, and especially the abstract part, y'all pull it all together at the abstract, and you really do hammer home the some of those things. And so I think utilizing the abstract area and seeing where, you know, like you said, EMS and fire suppression or EMS activities were more than that. And some of the things that we could hammer in is some of those key areas that we saw that were the top number of EMS, the top three EMS injuries, you know, that was lifting a patient or being bit by a rabid patient or something, whatever it may be. And you could outline those areas and that and reason why that they were more than that. And so, you know, I think that we could utilize that abstract area and make those recommendations on why at the very back of it. So.
And the other part is that
your stuff's pretty flat.
The commission is growing. The number of people that we regulate is growing, I'm assuming, right? But the total number of injuries have gone down. So as an organization, apparently part of what we're doing is working.
All right, so I'm way confused. We had a motion earlier.
I don't even remember what the motion was.
There was a motion to mandate
add the cancer,
the 11 recognized cancers from
2551.
2551, so, plus another column.
Plus another.
So as going to what you explained to us, and I do understand, one of the recommendations from here is that should be included in this report. Firefighters around Texas should be reporting occupational cancers.
Well, that's a recommendation that we want to take to the commission so that they can direct.
But as part of this report,
back to y'all, yeah, to include that.
We could revise the report to include that. More
what,
information
what
about
he's looking
cancer
at.
Reporting and the requirement to report it if it's workers' comp, and et cetera, or whatever they direct that we.
Are you suggesting we can accomplish that without making that proposal here?
Do you take that at the stand when we're at our next commission meeting?
I think the idea of doing a motion and voting on it, that legitimizes the consensus so that you then, or WSCO, or whoever can carry that to the commissioners in their meeting.
Okay. So you don't have a problem with us with that motion here?
No. You all can recommend whatever you want to recommend to them. I mean,
that's a motion in a second, so we've got that.
The other side of that, letter B of that, is you're looking for a recommendation based on this report that goes to the Texas Fire Marshal.
Either
through us or through.
So can we do that through two separate motions so we don't confuse this?
It might be better. That might be a good way to do it.
Okay. So we do have a motion. We do have a second. Is there any addition? Do we need to reread that motion for anybody that's listening that's probably completely thoroughly lost like we are?
Purposes of clarification, really, let's make sure we know what the motion is.
Yeah, let's restate it.
Do you want to read it back to us, Deb?
What I have is the motion is to recommend that cancer specified by Senate Bill 2551, the 11 mandatory, to be reported in workers' comp, also be reported to the commission, as well as any other type of cancers.
Thanks.
That sounds good.
That's great.
Spot on.
Absolutely.
And that's been seconded. So any additional discussion?
And that's for the change in the collection system, not a report to the Fire Marshal's office.
Correct.
Right.
Just so that everybody.
And we staff, based on the discussion here, what staff can do is over the next month and a half or so, before this thing gets gets submitted to the fire marshal's office. We'll sit down, take a look at the cancer page that, there that we have, and make sure that people are clear on what must be reported. You know, that kind of thing. We can work on that. Like you say, there seemed to be some ambiguity, and we certainly don't want that. So we can certainly clarify that within this document for sure. And then going forward, we can, we can work on getting more information out there.
Any additional discussion?
I'd also say the same motion for the post-traumatic stress, since there are presumptive laws on that.
Y'all did add that in there. Didn't you?
You came back and
you want to do those as separate?
I think we'll do the
motion separate.
Just vote on the one that's on the floor right now, and then we'll bring the other one up.
Correct.
Okay. Additional discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. You have another motion potentially, right?
Exactly the same thing, but for post-traumatic stress or. Or
suicide?
Yep, in suicide.
To include a suicide.
Yeah.
Unfortunate track.
And do we want to track attempted suicide as well? Not just the successfuls.
I think if it gets, the verbiage in there is just post-traumatic stress, so if they can link that to a post-traumatic stress, that's what it is. I don't think you're going to so much have to put it down, because the line of duty is going to be classified under post-traumatic stress, not as a suicide. So.
Second.
And if you need those bills, I can give those bills to you again.
Any additional discussion on the PTSD or suicide proposal? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Now back to the issue about this specific report that we're passing along. Any additional?
So that I understand this, are we not looking at, as is what Jim has stated, some outliers that we can say this year we're having, I'll just use for example, more burns to the head and chest. So our recommendation is either through public education or from your group when they go out and do your presentations, that this year we saw a trend here. Make sure your guys are wearing their hoods properly. I mean, it's almost a PSA.
We can make that as a recommendation in this document right here to start with. That would be one of those classic examples of a conclusion you're reaching based on what you're seeing here, that we're recommending to the fire service that fire departments take extra care to ensure that their personnel have the gear they're supposed to have, that it's being donned properly, that they do some training to make sure they know what they're doing, those sorts of things.
And that's what we take.
That would be an example of a recommendation that could go in here.
Okay.
So I'm going to assume we're probably going to have a list of at least two or three, if not more. So how would we do that in a...
As far as motions go and everything? Okay. You can do each one individually if you want to.
I think you'd be just listing all on your page. Burn.
Or that.
One, two, three.
So can we help Deb out by giving her a short laundry list? Of...
I think you pick your three most pertinent.
I would ask if there's possibility that somebody can craft it sitting up here. Exactly what you'd like it to say. Because what we're talking about now is a statement that's going in this thing.
Right.
So we really want to make sure we get the statement right. So you're going to do a motion regarding, say, for instance, thermal injuries. And the recommendation would read like this.
Okay, so
I don't think you need that much detail. I mean, really, you're just telling the commission next time what you think. If you identify your three areas and then your speaker comes next time with a written comment, the point is, like, if you want something in there for sure, like Tim is saying, you want it to be detailed, but if it's just going to be your comments, you can bring paper to the commission next time. Really, you're just telling them what you're recommending. But how much detail you need to do in motion or these things?
So, motion or not? Yes or no?
I would say the motion is the point is to establish the consensus that you three, that this group agrees about these recommendations. The level of detail you need, that's up to you.
Do we need a motion to start it off? Or?
I'd say your best off with just a motion saying, here are points of consensus that we want to make a discussion on. And you can elaborate now on the record, and you can have your speaker come next time and explain it in more detail, bring a written statement.
Okay, so I'll make a motion that we make three recommendations to the commission based on, not outstanding, but significant amounts or increases in these injuries. One being burn injuries. What was the other one? Did you say station injuries?
Station duties.
Station duties.
That's still...
top number.
It's still a leading injury.
And it's growing by about 20% a year.
And EMS injuries. So with a second, that'll get us started, and then we can discuss the...
Right. And I remember giving you comments earlier about the burns, and I do remember some comments about station duties. If any of you just want to elaborate now, I mean, feel free to, but, you know, I think just so long somebody can bring those discussion points to the commission next time, highlight it here.
Do you need a second?
Second.
So the thermal injuries, thermal burns have gone up. And the significant aspect of my body subtype are the ear and the face, which would more than likely lend itself to proper hood usage, proper SCBA hood interface.
That can contribute to stretched out hoods that aren't fitting any longer.
Right.
So make sure that the hoods are, the elastic in it is...
Proper use, proper donning of the hoods, proper use of the hoods, proper maintenance and care of the hoods should help. And then probably some increased training and usage of the hood SCBA mask interface.
And ear flaps.
And ear flaps, and about using ear flaps. Ear flaps are a minimum of 20 TPP. Protection added to your hood, which is a minimum of 25 or 20, but typically 25. You can typically get supposedly more TPP protection from a hood and a set of ear flaps than you can from your gear, technically. Not realistically, but technically. So it provides you a great deal of the protection. Another part of the burns is hands. Hands and wrists are high numbers. Together, which would probably lend itself to proper donning of your gloves and proper usage of your gloves, but proper donning with the coat and the interface in the coat.
And Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 51, as Jim just said, I mean, your hand and fingers, were probably running up into the 20s, and they went up as high as 30, so, that's probably maybe a 20-30% increase. The one further down, the arm, upper, not including elbow or shoulder, has gone from what we've been seeing, one or two a year, to 11. That's five times or better. 500% increase on that one. The rest of them, you can kind of see, even the multiple body parts, upper body, is double. But there's probably three parts of the body here that are listed that are significant increases, it appears. I don't know if you want to...
Grace, as long as you've been standing there, we probably should have gotten you a chair 10 minutes ago. Some of these definitions to help me out. So where it says arm, upper, not including elbow or shoulder. So are we specifically talking about the flat plane of the arm between the elbow and the shoulder?
Yeah, I guess so. Biceps, triceps.
seems like a unique area of the body to get burned, and not on your shoulder or not on your elbow.
Well, that's, well, if you look at it, the problem with that is multiple body parts, upper body. So if they chose that, they're not going to choose that arm spot right there. So they may be burned shoulder and everything. That's why you see the growth from 4 to 10 right there and nothing for that part of the arm. So it may be from here up somebody got burned. But
it's just the interpretation of which category, which box they're going to check.
Correct.
Because I know on the arm lower, there's an NA there. So
there's nothing there.
It's just the opposite. So it's possible. It's just trending steady. Mm-hmm. We're just changing the way we're reporting.
Correct.
And once again, we'll play devil's advocate. This doesn't address the number of incidents where they were potentially burned. Our fires went up threefold, or they dropped by 50%. That would alter our stats. Because we went up from 22 to 30, that might be great.
Right. That's right.
Okay, so we've got this laundry list already of the three suggestions on the motion. Jim, you just explained the burns, the thermal burns to the ears and face. You also had station duties and EMS. Is there any additional explanation that you want?
Well, you were the one that was talking about station duties.
Well, I'll tell you, for as far as EMS, I know that now we're documenting exposures differently, and that's the reason why it's even says that's more detailed. So making sure you're, you know, proper PPE, because you see, you know, you got a lot of stuff in here that you could be exposed to. So proper PPE and it's a scene management type stuff. And some of those exposures, those could also be at the station too, like chlorine or bleach and stuff of that. So, you know, it's cleaning exposures and station management. But
Grace, on that wellness and fitness, do they specify what they were actually doing to be counted as an injury? In other words,
sometimes
running.
Sometimes they do.
Or
sometimes. Just, sometimes they don't.
Okay.
Again, it's probably something that would be in the narrative.
Okay. So if it was a back injury, it'd be tracked as one of the back.
We would think so.
Notice that number went up significantly, or went up some also, is wellness and fitness.
I only picked three based on what we were talking about. If
right.
You guys find something else, that's fine. We can always amend the motion.
I just pulled them from the abstract. Those are the numbers that they have in the abstract, and so.
Would this recommendation then not maybe go back to your committee to come up with a PSA to address these now? Maybe.
Correct, but as Tim mentioned, that's a whole separate.
No, but I mean, these recommendations would be going to the fire marshal's office, but the message to get out to the fire service maybe comes from your committee putting something together.
That's exactly what they're working on. That's the intent. I'm not sure if I'm understanding your question. Any additional verbiage or wording we want to put on here?
Good.
You have all of that? Okay. And that is in the form of a motion and it has been seconded, correct?
Okay. Any additional discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? So moved.
Good job again, Grace.
Yeah, thank you.
The report's really good.
Thank you.
We just need the. We need to up a little bit.
Sorry to make you stand in for something.
Item number 8, discussion and possible action on setting future meeting dates, locations, and agenda items. We've got the September, the December already.
September 19th and December 4th.
We need to go out any further than that.
No. Just next year.
Is
December
4th.
Uh-huh, December 4th.
Do you have an update?
It's a discussion, so there's no action.
I can't.
Anything else?
New one?
Number nine. Item number nine, adjourn the meeting.
How do I get it?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Email it.
Second.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Turn your mics off.